You're listening to the Zen Courses Show, episode 33, baby. I am such a goofball.
Welcome to the Zen Courses Show, the show for online course creators who care about building actionable, meaningful, and profitable online courses. If you're a solo entrepreneur, tech geek, or creative, the Zen Courses Show is the place to get expert advice for creating your online course, overcoming overwhelm, and growing a balanced business. To get the full experience, sign up at zencourses.co, where you'll get access to free lessons, resources, and more. Again, that's zencourses.co.
Hey, it's Janelle, your host. I was gonna say today, but I'm always your host. On this show, at least. So listen, this is the part where I tell you what to expect out of this episode. And I got a good one for you today. Today, I am interviewing Philip Morgan from philipmorganconsulting.com. If you're subscribed to the newsletter, you know that I have been mentioning Philip quite a bit lately. And there's good reason for that. He is the expert of a thing called positioning. If you don't know what positioning is, you're gonna find out in this episode, but I'll just say this. Positioning is the foundation of successful marketing. It is the thing that no one ever tells you about when they try to teach you about marketing. And it is something that has completely changed the game for how I market. So in this episode, you'll find out more about what positioning is and how to use it to sell more courses, other digital products, and even services, especially services. So listen up for that, but also listen to the end, because in the outro, I'm going to share some exciting things, some fun stuff that Philip and I are doing together that you can be involved in to help you learn more about positioning and marketing. So stay tuned for that. And now let's get to it. What's up, everyone? Thank you so much for tuning in to the Zen Courses Show today. I am beyond excited to have Philip Morgan in the house. Philip is the author of the Positioning Manual for Technical Firms. He's also a consultant who helps technical companies and entrepreneurs go from generalist to specialist. He joins us today to talk about his new program and how you can use positioning to grow your business. Philip, welcome to the Zen Courses Show.
Thank you so much, Janelle. Psyched to be here.
So we're going to get into your story in a moment. But for anyone listening who doesn't know what the heck positioning is and how it can help them as a course creator, I just want to give them, can you give them like one or two sentences to just really put it into context?
You know, it's a tiny bit paradoxical, but when you narrow down the focus of your services or a piece of content, or some program that's designed to help people change and improve, somewhat paradoxically, the value almost always goes up. And that's really the core concept behind positioning. And we could talk about that for an hour, but yeah. that's the promise. That's the concept. There's ways to, you know, screw it up. But if you do it right, it's a way to deliver more value by focusing what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have full disclosure to anyone listening. I have learned so much from Philip in the past few months about positioning. I can't wait to share. It's definitely changed how I approach my business and the courses I create. So I can't wait until we get into it. But before we do, I like to kick off every interview by asking 5 quick questions to help listeners get to know you. Are you ready?
I think so. I have not gotten these in advance, so I'll do my best here.
Okay, so first one up, what is your favorite song out right now?
Okay, well, let me look at, I don't listen to a lot of super current music.
Okay,
does it have to be current?
What's the favorite song that you're rocking lately? How about that?
So I was listening to this playlist this morning. It's this song, hold on here, I'm looking through Apple Music. You know what? It's called Sugar Water by this group. These two Japanese women, Chibo Mato. There's two T's in that last thing. CIBOMATTO. It's just so much fun.
Hmm.
Okay. Sort of, yeah, check that out.
Chibo Mato. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's definitely different.
Two female Japanese electronica artists that are kind of a duo. And
okay.
Yeah.
So you're down with electronica. Okay. Okay. Yep. Cool. So I know you're out in California. And I assume, and I could be wrong, but I assume that you like to get outdoors a lot. So what is that fair or is that no?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So what's your favorite outdoors activity?
This is going to sound weird, but it's walking down the street I live on. I found there's two kinds of roads. There's the kind of road that has a yellow line down the middle and then the kind that doesn't. And on the kind that doesn't, people drive a lot slower because there's no yellow line to assure them that they're not going to get hit by some other car. And our road is like that, the road we live on. And it's just beautiful. There's rolling hills, views. You can see the fog from the coast. You can't see the coast from here. We're not that close. But it's just this really diverse, beautiful environment. And I love that I can just walk out my door and it's there. Mm. Yeah. Aside from that, there's tons of other cool spots in Sonoma County. But that's one of my favorite.
Okay, cool. So next one is a little bit different. Who has had the biggest influence in who you are today as an entrepreneur?
That would be a sort of an amalgam of anybody that I've seen be successful as an introvert and also successful as an entrepreneur. And there's a number of people who along the way have been inspirational. Brennan Dunn is a name that comes up. Anybody who can operate with integrity and sell their services and products online is some form of an inspiration to me. And I really have kind of picked from different quarters. I follow a couple internet marketer types who are, come across a little bit sleazy, but I learned from them. I've learned from a number of places, but if I had to name somebody, I guess I'd pick Brennan.
Yeah. Okay. So the next question is fun. It's one I've been asking. I'm curious to see how you feel about it. How do you feel about cheese?
Oh, the more the better. So my feelings are summed up, the more the better. Or if you wanted to get smaller than that, yes, please.
Perfect.
Can I have seconds?
Exactly. All right. So if you weren't doing the work that you are today, if you weren't a positioning expert and consultant, what would you be doing?
I would probably be teaching, I think. Or publishing some kind of weird print newsletter. Hmm. One of those two things. I enjoy teaching, so I think I could find some way to do that worked for me. And in fact, that is a big component of what I do.
Yeah.
Or maybe just, some kind of weird, niche print newsletter or something. That's something I've considered doing.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah. Well, I know that you do love teaching and you're excellent at it. So let's kind of segue into talking about that. First, how did you come to be the positioning expert? Did you wake up one morning and just have this eureka moment? What's your entrepreneurial story?
Yeah, I wish I could take full credit for it. The idea of positioning is not at all original to me. It's not even that new. It's something that's been around in some form under that label since the late 70s and early 80s. So, my love affair with the idea of narrowing your focus and positioning yourself in a certain way came out of, I'm going to say, 4 or 5 years of sort of struggling to be self-employed and work for myself. And I just could not figure out how to attract clients. It just seemed like it was luck or who you knew. Or, you just kind of right place, right time sort of a thing. And I couldn't figure it out. I hate mysteries like that stand in between where I am and where I want to be. So I don't hate them. I just become sort of obsessed with them and want to try to figure out what's really going on and what's the pattern, what's the system that makes things work. So part of answering that question for myself was, being introduced by other people really to the idea of positioning and then going, wow, this is really interesting. And it just became so interesting that I researched as much as I could and saw that there was nobody talking about it for freelancers and small professional services businesses. So yeah. There are, in fact, books about positioning. So if you go to Amazon.com and search for positioning, you'll see a number of excellent books. One, which has become a bit dated. It's unfortunate it hasn't been updated, but the original book was by Al Reese and another guy whose name I'm forgetting. And that's just simply called Positioning. That really speaks to products and big brands and how they can use that concept. And there is a book called Positioning for Professional Services that really speaks to larger professional services businesses, companies like Deloitte and like really big services firms. There just was nothing about how to apply the concept at a smaller scale. And so it's a little bit meta, but I just sort of looked for that hole in the market and sort of moved into occupying that position. And sort of supported that interest with a lot of generating a lot of content around it. And it still continues to be super fascinating to me today. How can real people who are just maybe a solo freelancer or a small 5 or 10 or 100 person business, how can they apply this to make things better?
Yeah. And, I've read your book on positioning, and there's three key elements of figuring out when you're trying to figure out your positioning. Can you kind of touch on those for anyone listening, especially any freelancers or anyone out there offering a service who is having those struggles of how do I find clients? Can you touch on those?
I can, yeah. so I'll sort of give a bit of a prologue to that. One of the things you need to think about is where are you right now? If you are operating as a generalist, that means a couple of things. You probably will take basically any client that's a reasonably good fit. And whether they're a good fit is not about whether they fit a narrow range of criteria. It's just like, can they pay you? Do they seem like they're going to be okay to work with? These are all the sort of the first things we start looking for in fit. But as a generalist, we tend to not be very selective. And I was a generalist for, a good 5 years. So I'm not criticizing being a generalist. I'm just saying that's where most of us start out. And if that's where you are, the easiest thing to do is to simply focus your generalist thing you do. So maybe you're a web developer, maybe you're a designer of some sort, maybe you're a life coach, or you just have some kind of set of skills that you're used to putting in service of your client's needs. You just, the first thing you do is figure out who you could focus those skills on in a way that would let you develop those skills faster so that you can eventually become more of an expert. And so that's the first of the three things you talked about. And that's picking a market to focus on or picking an audience. And once you do that, often that's all you have to do. Not in every case, but that's oftentimes all you have to do.
Yeah.
Another sort of dimension that you can become more focused in is what you do for people. So you may have some expertise or some specialty in a problem that shows up in a lot of different markets, a lot of different audiences. What would be an example of that? In the technical world, it would be someone who focuses, let's say, on making e-commerce sites make more money. That's an easy example. That problem shows up anywhere there's an e-commerce site, and that could be, in the sports industry, that could be in online events, that could be in a lot of different places, right? So that would be focusing on a type of problem or a type of result that you can create. And that's the second basic way you can narrow down your focus. And the third thing that I think is really important to talk about or to understand is how you're different. How do you differentiate your services from other competition? I think, a lot of us just in general fear competition way too much.
Yeah.
And so for people who are in that sort of mindset, I say, well, there's some way that you're different and unique. And if you can kind of explore and find out what that is, and that that difference actually matters to your clients, I mean, that's the whole other part of finding a good market position, is finding out what the market wants, or what the kind of clients that you could work with really want and what they value. But yeah. It usually starts with sort of looking internally and kind of doing some self-assessment. And so that third area that you can assess is, you know, what's unique about me or my company, and what are our strong points, and maybe how do we approach things differently? So that's the third thing.
Yeah. And, you know, for anyone who is listening and having a hard time relating this to their desire to create an online course, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on is because the way I see it, when I started learning from you, I thought immediately this applies to courses as well. You know, figuring out what it is that you, who you're going to serve, you know, with your course, figuring out what it is you're going to offer, what solution or result you're going to deliver. And then the third thing is how you're different from other people in your market. So just wanted to put that out there for anyone who is maybe listening and thinking, well, how does that apply to me?
You know, one of the things you can kind of add to that, Janelle, is the idea that if you're thinking of yourself as different because you offer a cheaper price or like more volume of content, I would say that I would encourage people to think, well, where does that lead you? Because usually it's some sort of race to the bottom, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to keep the price the same but deliver more content is a form of a race to the bottom, because you have to ask, are you really adding more value by, you know, adding more hours of video content to a course? And then, of course, lowering the price is a race to the bottom in terms of price.
Yeah, not only in terms of price, but psychologically, you know, it's been tested and proven that when we start seeing things that are priced too low, we immediately think that it doesn't have as much value as something that's priced higher.
One of my mentoring students just yesterday said that exact same thing. He was asking for a book recommendation on how to write better client emails, and he got two book recommendations on the same subject. One of them was $15-$20, and the other one was like $50. And that price was a signal to him that one of them was a better book. And guess what? It wasn't the $15-$20 book that he thought was better. And that's a form of like judging a book by its cover, right?
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, the cover price.
Okay. So we've talked about that you've literally written a book on positioning. I know you also conduct regular webinars, or micro-nors, as you call them. And you still do coaching and consulting. So why, after everything that you do, did you decide to offer an online learning program, your Prison Break Bootcamp?
So I guess a tiny bit of backstory might help. So I wrote this book, and it's one of very few books on the subject of positioning, and people would read the book, and I'm always, you know, always happy to answer questions. In fact, I do, you know, I spend, it depends, but between 30 minutes and an hour a day responding to reader questions. And I actually enjoy doing that. If I could find some way to get a trust fund, have my name attached to it, I would just do that for free. I really do enjoy it. But I saw that people needed help with applying the ideas that are in that book. So I started a mentoring program, and that was sort of my first experience with working with a group of people over a period of time to help them apply these ideas and create change in their business. And I should look back and see. I think I've been doing that, it seems like it's about a year, but maybe it's a little bit less than a year. And that made me realize that people really move at different speeds. And the one thing I don't have in that mentoring program is any kind of like predefined agenda. Like, okay, during this week or during this period of time, you're going to be working on this, and you need to have that stuff done by this date. Like, there's no schedule. And so it's open-ended, which makes it a very flexible thing. And I think that, you know, there's a sort of situation where that's the right tool. I started thinking about doing something that was more of a boot camp where it's like, you know, X number of weeks. And once that's over, or throughout that, you know, the first one was 3 weeks, and I am thinking about doing the next one with a slightly different schedule. But let's just stick with the example of 3 weeks. So for week one, there's, you know, sort of like a to-do list, and there's things that need to happen. And so there's much more of an idea that in this certain amount of time, you're going to make this much progress. And of course, as all your listeners, if they're creators of courses, will know, not everybody can move forward at the same speed. It's not 100% of the people who are in it are going to get to that end point. But there's the idea that there's a lot of structure. And I'm trying to think why I did that. It's hilarious. I'm like, I don't know. It just seemed like a good idea.
Yeah.
Or it seemed like something that was missing. It just seemed like, okay, here's this open-ended thing. Go at your own pace. I'm just, you know, with the mentoring program, which is what I'm talking about, that open-ended go at your own pace thing, there's weekly office hours. There's a little bit of structure, but it really is super open-ended. It's very much go at your own pace. It's like self-study thing with, you know, I'm there to help you with questions.
Just with access to you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy with how that's turned out. But I felt like, wow, what if I cranked up the pressure somehow?
Well, I was going to ask you, you know, not to interrupt, but I just wanted to ask you, we know that self-paced courses, I think we know that as people who have taken self-paced courses and also kind of seeing people who've created them, that the completion rates are really low.
Yeah.
And so then you have the mentorship program, which you said is kind of, you know, self-led, but they have access to you. So the question that comes to mind is, how were the results? Were people taking action? Were they getting the results? Did that have any impact on your decision to create something more structured?
Right. So I was shocked when I started. So, I mean, I have a little bit of a background in training and education. In a sort of previous incarnation of my career, I did some work for an agency that did some work for Microsoft Learning, producing instructor-led training, ILT, right? And so I knew that, and actually had experience in the classroom too, way back. So I knew that model produced results. And of course, like a lot of people, I've become very fascinated with the idea of this online, more scalable model. And you see people do that where they kind of crank out a bunch of videos and create some instructional design component, and they're like, okay, here's a course and you can pay for it, and you know, here's the testimonials of the percentage of people that it worked for. I was shocked to find out what that percentage of people that it worked for actually is.
And
I think it wasn't that long ago, actually. It was I was listening to an interview with Seth Godin. He talked about this course he did for Udemy. And the Udemy folks were just over the moon with how great it was, because like only 80% of people dropped out. I was like, whoa, that sounds terrible. Like that just sounds like an embarrassingly bad stat. But compared to their typical course, it was like 10% more people stayed and completed it. So I'm sure you know a lot better than I do, Janelle, but that apparently that's about what you can expect, like maybe a sort of 80-20 rule, right?
Yeah.
And so I was always interested in the idea of taking my book on positioning and turning it into some kind of online course. But the work to build the curriculum and the sort of number of unknowns made that not the most attractive option. And for some reason, I started this mentoring program. And I was just, it just has two pieces, you know, a chat room and office hours. And so you asked about results. I need to start more formally tracking results. So it is very open-ended. People can join for a month and then, you know, quit if they don't like it, or they can be there as long as they want. So what I've seen is that maybe I'm just going to take a guess at some numbers here. I'm going to guess that maybe half of the people who move through it make some kind of progress in whatever it is that they wanted to make progress in. So they have, you know, they get some better clarity about what their positioning is, or they start to see actual results in terms of attracting new clients. It's not 100%. People, like, I've had people come and go for various reasons. They get busy and it's no longer a priority.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of get into it when they're a little bit worried about their business. And then that, you know, that feast part of the feast famine cycle starts to kick in. And so they have, you know, that worry goes away, which is the thing that was driving them being there. I've had one or two people, health issues, which is always sad, but, you know, I understand. So I would say overall, maybe half of participants make some kind of meaningful progress. And there, of course, a smaller number is going to be the kind of success that you really want to put on there as like a case study or a client testimonial.
Right, right.
And the other thing I should say is that this is not a big mentoring program. Like for a long time, it was just five people or there were five seats available. And now it's 10 because I've decided I want to kind of invest more into this. So, I think the results are significantly better than the typical unguided, just kind of bunch of videos or bunch of content in an LMS type model, right? Actually, I'd love to hear from you. what numbers do you see for something like that, where it's like, I'm going to stick some stuff in an LMS and I'm going to sell access and that's the product?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. So the numbers, completion rates are low. You do mm-hmm. see, you know, usually on average about a 50% drop-off rate, if not higher, for self-paced courses. Hybrid courses are better, but, you know, they also have their own sticking points in that sometimes people, you know, scheduling is an issue.
Yeah.
And so I think that I'm a fan of the hybrid approach, because I think that if you really love teaching and you're really focused on results, then there's got to be some type of access to you, you know?
Right.
However, it needs to be, especially when we already have the knowledge that self-paced courses just don't get the results that people promise. So I think it's very important to build in that type of structure. Now, it's, like I said, it's challenging because not everybody has that scalability to do that. So I think where we're at with courses, we're kind of in this second wave where people are leveling up, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people are taking courses and they've spent a lot of money and they didn't get the outcomes that they were looking for. And a lot of people who are taking courses really do want some sort of access, especially when the stakes are higher, you know, especially when it's about, okay, I need to get clients for my business, or I'm not going to be able to feed my family. You know, when it's something like that, you don't just want the information. Not everybody, you know, you kind of want some sort of mentorship or coaching or access, office hours, whatever the case may be. So hybrid courses definitely get better results, just for that fact alone.
So now I have the official term for what I'm doing, which is the mentoring program. It was just kind of, there was no structure at all when I started. And what I've started doing is I've started seeing patterns of like, oh, okay, so people go through this problem. This is a sticking point. This is a sort of logical sequence to do things when you're doing, let's say, market research. And I've started to build some very lightweight curriculum to go with that. It's almost, curriculum maybe is overselling it. Right now, it's just like, here's the procedure. It's almost like a standard operating procedure with some collections of resources and templates.
Yep.
So you know, that was sort of my first move away from basically, let's just get on Skype together once a week, right?
Yeah.
But I'm really glad that it worked that way, because I wasn't building anything in the abstract, right?
Or exactly.
It was kind of off in my cave building something that I think is going to help. But to kind of get back to your question that spurred this line of conversation, the boot camp came out of this mentoring thing where I was like, okay, I could kind of I could look at this sort of pattern that people go through and sort of crystallize that down to something that is way more structured. Yeah. And offer that as a really an event. Like if it was 3 weeks, I think it'll be the next time I do it should be between 4 and 6 weeks. And that's really what made that happen. And I've always been willing to try things. And for some reason, I've been willing to try things that I'm not 100% sure will work, even if people pay me money to do them. Which I can't decide if that is a like a psychopathic tendency or just a an entrepreneurial thing. I don't know which.
I definitely think it's entrepreneurial. So before we move on to the next topic, I just want to say that one of the things I love about you is that you do try things out. But for anyone listening, doing something similar to what whether you want to call it mentorship or coaching or some type of way of getting face time mm-hmm. with your audience, who then become your customers, is a great way to create something. You know, when you go on to create your online course, you've got all this research of what people have problems with, the questions that they need answers to, and it really sets you up for more success, because you've already pre-validated that this is a thing for people and they need it. So just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, I think of that as paid research.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, so we've been dancing on the sidelines of Prison Break Bootcamp, but I want to really delve into it. First question, what is it officially and who is it for?
So it's a boot camp style event where I help participants build a very it's funny, the second time I do it, it'll probably be less ambitious than the first time, and I'll explain why. But I help you build a very minimal marketing funnel. So that's what it is. I provide a ton of templates so that you don't have to ever face a blank page at any point in the process. And I provide structure in the form of, here's two or three ways we could approach this. They're sort of like recipes. And that I sort of provide a to-do list. All of that stuff was, some of it was built during the boot camp. It was like, okay, in week one, I was building the things that we needed for week two. I had a lot of it when we started.
Yeah.
It was priced at an extremely low level. It was $400 for this this thing, and I sold 8 seats and gave away 2 seats. So I had, I had 10 people split into 2 groups of 5 who met at separate times. And, we went through this process of, okay, here's a bunch of resources, some sort of raw materials and templates and so forth. Let's try to build a very minimal marketing funnel for your services. And who it's for is anyone who's sort of facing the pressures of commoditization. So that would be someone who builds websites. How are you enjoying the fact that Squarespace is such an attractive alternative to a custom WordPress website? Probably not very much if you build custom WordPress websites on the low end. How are you liking the fact that you can hire a WordPress developer for, literally, I think for some small jobs, $5. How is that working for you? If those things are problems for you, or if they are starting to affect your business, it means you're facing the pressures of commoditization. And so this is really meant for people who are in that situation as a way to start to build a path out of there. So that's why I call it the Prison Break Bootcamp. I really think commoditization is luckily I've never been in prison. I've had a few brushes with the law, but nothing that's ended up with me in prison. And but I have sort of felt that feeling of sort of desperation and being trapped in my business when I had no way to meaningfully differentiate myself. So everything about this bootcamp is really aimed at helping people kind of engineer their way out of that and build something, a marketing asset that can help them start to get out of it.
Yeah.
Now, so that's what it is and that's who it's for.
Okay. Now I want to dig into the structure because, this is key. Most of the guests who have been on the Zen Courses show so far are pretty much doing self-paced courses.
Mm-hmm.
You are an exception. And I love that because I want people to know and realize that there's no one way to teach.
Right.
There's tons of ways. So let's talk about the structure. You have, I'm looking at your page for Prison Break right now. You're using sessions, since it's live, you've got these sessions, and you're actually doing two tracks. Talk about that. What was the deciding factor for how to structure this thing and how many sessions and why to do two groups?
So a lot of that came out of the mentoring program where, so I never, for whatever reason, I think there's a lot of luck here, to be honest. So, you know, when I started selling the mentoring program, I think maybe I would have been willing to stick 10 people on a group call and try that. And I just don't think I wasn't able to sell that many seats, or for some reason, I never ended up with more than 5 people on a call. And this is funny. So I'm looking at my sheet of paper here. I actually have a table printed out that shows me if I have a 90-minute call and I have 5 people on it, each person gets 18 minutes. And if I have 4 people, each person gets 23 minutes, and then it goes to 30 with 3. That's easy, but I have to print this out because I can't do the math on the fly for, you know, what's 90 divided by 4. So I just noticed that 5 people seemed to be the most that I could get on a group video call, and each person felt like they had enough time to kind of go deep into at least one or two things. And it gets better if it's more like 3 people. That's really where I feel like each person can, we can actually solve some kind of problem. So I felt like that there was some kind of sort of ceiling at 5 people. And so that's why I, on the prison break, I said, okay, the tracks are going to, you know, each track is going to have 5 people at most. Now I'll be honest here. The month that I launched that, I was looking at my cash flow and I was like, I need about this much money for this to be a decent month. So I'm just going to try to sell that much divided by, you know, the price of the boot camp, which was $400. That was, again, the sort of pilot program pricing. So I just divided how much money I needed to buy 400. And I was like, oh, if I sold 10 seats, I'd be a little bit over where I need to be. So let's do two tracks. It really was that kind of self-interested thinking. And also, you know, there were other considerations like, okay, I could fit that into my schedule. Now, with the boot camp, the working sessions were when we got together we used Google Hangouts, and everybody in that track got together at the appointed time on a Google Hangout, and that was a 3-hour working session. I've never done anything like that. I'm trying to think if I've ever had a video call that was over 90 minutes, and I don't think I have except for these. Mm. So the idea was that we would have a lot of time. And of course, there would be other structure too. There would be like, okay, before working session one, you need to have the following things done. And then before working session two, you need to have these other things done. So there was there was homework between, and then there were the working sessions themselves. And the idea was that we could really, whatever the problem was, if we had 3 hours, you know, we should be able to solve that inside a 3-hour working session. And that was not at all what needed to be improved about that. It wasn't that we needed more time on the video chat. It was that we needed, what I found from that first, you know, pilot program was that folks needed more structure and more time to do homework between the sessions.
Yeah.
You probably saw that a mile away.
Well, I'm shaking my head. Well, I'm nodding my head, rather, because what I think that part of that second wave that I was referring to earlier is people are realizing that they need more structure. And I think, like, we know that in our personal lives, like, we know, mm-hmm. you know, we know kind of our own self issues around time management and all that stuff. But for some reason, with courses, we're just getting to that point where people are realizing, maybe I should put some more structure in this thing. So I love that you did that. And I think it's right on target. I also love that this is the timing of this interview is pretty good because you wrapped up mid-May. Mm-hmm. So how did things work out? What were the results? Were people able to get their assignments done and stay on track?
The results, of course, are mixed. Not as good as I would like. And fault is not the right word, but just, you know, I learned a lot about how something like this works. So here's what I learned that might benefit your audience. I'll start by saying, so the results were, I think about 4 students got as far as I think is reasonable out of 10, right? So not as good as I would like. I'd love to see that be more like 70-80% of people just got things built. Mm-hmm. The boot camp is, so the first one was 3 weeks. You cannot in 3 weeks build the kind of marketing funnel that I'm trying to help people build and start getting results from it. Yeah. So the boot camp is always going to be like a smaller amount of time than, well, I don't know. It doesn't have to be that way. I could structure it differently. What I'm trying to say is that certain things like inbound marketing or certain things are going to take more time than I think I want people to try to carve out on their calendar. So there's always going to be sort of, we're going to get some things in motion, we're going to build some things, and then over time, you're going to start to see the results. And so 3 weeks is really like just the building time, and then getting results is more like 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
That said, the place where I see the biggest shortcoming in what I did the first time around was and this is a chronic problem I have, and I bet other people do too, I just underestimate how much time things take. Mm-hmm. So there were things like, I'll give you an example, building a prospecting list to do some outbound marketing. That takes way more time than I think I planned for. And so I should have either started that or I should have assigned that homework earlier in the process or just allowed more time for it to happen. Or I'm looking at using all of these ways of fixing it, you know, moving it up in the sort of agenda so it starts earlier, providing more support with how to do it, and also kind of miniaturizing. So this is really one of the bigger things I'm looking at doing in the next round is how can I instead of building like a fully functional marketing funnel, maybe there's real instructional value and real, you know, business benefit in guiding people through building I think of it as a scale model. I know that, you know, that's kind of like a dude thing. Like you grow up, you're building scale models of airplanes or whatever, but how could we maybe build a scale model so that you practice all the skills that you need to learn? You go through the process, you see it end to end, but it takes less time than building the full thing. Maybe that's part of the answer. I don't know.
Well, it sounds like, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is it sounds like you learned a lot through the journey, which I think is important to say, because a lot of times we get so, I don't know if afraid is the right word, but we just kind of get freaked out about trying to know everything at once. And you've just really got to embrace the journey and try things at a certain point and learn from them. So it sounds like you did that. But it also sounds like I couldn't help but think that you're building different like live classes, almost like one class is a prerequisite for an advanced class, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that sounds like a natural progression. You know, there are certain things that you need to be able to do to start. And then there are certain, like you said, things that take more time and are more advanced. So kudos to you.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much. I completely resonate with what you're saying where it's like if I tried to envision the ultimate version of this, it would be something I could never build because there would be so many details, so many interrelated components, so many things to think about. I would just say, well, let me just write that down and get to it later, and I never would.
Yeah.
So I've very... You know, I've sort of embraced the idea of a minimum viable thing. And I think, you know, I think you can definitely do a lot of terrible work with that idea, but I don't think it condemns you to do bad work. I think it makes a lot of things possible that would otherwise be, you know, as Ralph Wiggum said, impossible. Because you can kind of build things iteratively. You can put out something that does have value, that's very rough and unfinished and has flaws. And, as, you know, if the price corresponds to the value that it does have, then you can get the practice of going through. And I haven't found another way to do that, to get that real information about what needs to be better, other than putting it in front of real people, again, at a reasonable price, so that the fact that it's not perfect is reflected in the pricing. I'm okay with that.
You know, you mentioned underestimating earlier, and I think one of the things that we underestimate just as people is the importance of just two things. One, just getting started.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just having someone to guide you. And it doesn't have to, we a lot of times think about creating this perfect online course and we put things off because we're trying to strive for perfection. But there is absolutely nothing wrong with just getting started. And people are okay if something isn't perfect because you're actually doing them a service and providing value by helping them get their thing working. So, you know,
I wanted to jump in and ask you a question.
Yeah.
How much do you see course creators sort of comparing themselves to, let's pick on Ramit Sethi, for example, like, you know, he makes a ton of money through courses and his courses are expensive. They're, you know, sort of Cadillac versions. They are, I think, probably very resource intensive to build. How many people do you see, like aspiring course creators, do you see sort of comparing themselves to somebody like Ramit and saying, ah, I can't put this in front of people unless it's looks that impressive?
You know, that's a really timely question. So I think a lot of people do. I think that most of the people who reach out to me, in the back of their minds, they are thinking about all of these pristine examples of online courses. Mm-hmm. And what we don't know is, or what we don't think about, is these are people who have teams. These are people who are making $1 million a year, if not more. And they have the resources, human and otherwise, to make these courses. And, you know, if I'm completely honest, just because a course is $2,000-$4,000 doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to deliver the results. You know, I think we both have heard stories, and I know I've gotten emails from people who have taken pricey programs. So we have to, I think, stop comparing ourselves to people who have a ton of resources and time to put out this product that is, you know, at a certain level. Because the reality is everyone, every single person started with a minimal viable product. Every single person. And we have to remind ourselves that that is the starting place. If just as that was the starting place for them, it's the starting place for us. And it's where you learn and you can get to a different level after you've learned what you needed to learn at the foundation.
I'm remembering my experience working for the agency that built some courses for Microsoft Learning. And there's some painful memories there. Those are a little different than what I'm doing, but I'm wondering if they didn't sort of, in some way that I could have never predicted, help me get started in a way that I think is a little more effective. And here's what I mean. Those courses for MSL used, so they were teaching people how to use whatever was Microsoft's current server software product at the time. And so they were very heavy on the, there was like a printed student manual, there were slide decks.
Yeah.
And then there were these virtual machines that had to be set up and configured very exactingly so that students could do lab exercises, right? And that was the most painful part, was setting up those virtual machines, because there were so many things that could go wrong. And I think that really, sort of maybe traumatized me a little bit, but created this aversion to complexity, or created an aversion to, let's make the most complex version of this we can for version one. Like, I think it sort of just helped me see the value of a very humble, minimal but reliable and not failure prone version one.
Yeah. Well, the most important thing is delivering results, right? Delivering the results that people are seeking. And the way I like to put it, the results that you've promised. And yeah. It doesn't have to be a huge, big, you know, fancy course in order to do that. And I think that that's what we miss, is that we think that we need to go all out in order. No, focus on the results. If we're delivering that, that's the value. That is yeah. the value right there. So let's switch gears a little bit, because you've mentioned, I'm curious to know about the technology that you use to put this together. You mentioned Google Hangouts, which I got to be honest and say I was surprised, because you introduced me to Crowdcast and I thought that you were going to be using Crowdcast. So was there a reason you chose Hangouts as opposed to Crowdcast for this?
Crowdcast has a 90-minute limitation.
That's right.
On, and I think that was one of the things. And also, there may have been one or two other things, but that was the big sort of deal breaker.
Okay.
And of course, we could hang up and start over, and it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But I was just like, I'm going to be honest, I was super nervous about doing this whole thing. It was a bunch of stuff I had never tried before. Like I said, never had done a 90-minute, you know, staring at people through a video camera thing before.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, let's go with the things that I am more comfortable with. So that was the reason there.
Gotcha.
And, you know, I use Google Docs to provide people with templates. I used there was a part of me, I got to tell you, the sort of little devil on my shoulder was like, okay, go out and figure out what LMS you need to use for this and, you know, throw a bunch of technology at it. And I'm so glad I didn't, because the problems that, or the things that needed to be improved next time have nothing to do, very little to do with technology. So I used Google Docs for giving people access to templates. I used I used a section on my WordPress site to kind of provide the sort of procedures that people needed to follow. And that wasn't even, when I did the course, I just set it to, so it wouldn't be indexed by Google. I didn't even have a login for that. It just was like, go to this URL, you know, go through the process there, ping me on Slack if you have questions, show up at this time and try to have your homework done.
Nice. Yeah. Nice and lean. That's great. That's great. I tell people all the time that technology should be the last thing. First, think about the content and what you need to deliver, what the results are, and then figure out how to make it work. So yeah. I love that image. You said you felt like you had the devil on your shoulder telling you to get distracted by choosing an LMS and all of that. You know, if that worked, if the organization and structure of your course had demanded that, I think it would have made sense. But the way you ran this with the live sessions, you absolutely didn't need to go that route.
And, you know, I am thinking about even, you know, going a further away from what the little shoulder devil is whispering to me. Next time, I may just set up a Trello board for each person in the boot camp. And that's essentially doing what the LMS would do. It's like, okay, you know, this Trello card is the first thing you should do. It has a link to any resources you need. And when you're done with it, move it over to this other list that shows that you've completed it. Like stuff like that
is really interesting.
Probably going to give me everything I need. You know, I'm not sure yet, but I'm looking at ways to, again, I'm interested in one thing, which is I want to get that email from somebody that says I landed my first client from this thing, Philip.
Right.
And, you know, I'm making 10 times what I spent for it. That's what I want.
Well, that is a very creative way to not only use different tools out there, but to track progress, which, you know, as we know, is a huge motivator. It's why people are wearing Fitbits and all of those things, you know, kind of being able to track their progress. So very interesting and very creative. Cool. So let's talk marketing before we move to the final segment. I know you self-identify as an introvert. So what strategies did you use to market Prison Break Bootcamp as an introvert?
So I'm very big on email marketing. It's just sort of a natural fit for me. I mean, I think everybody should consider using email marketing, but I won't go as far as to say it's, you know, it's the only good way for an introvert to market themselves. But it's worked for me. So I have a list of about 1,400 people. It fluctuates between 1,400, 1,500 people, depending on how crazy I get in the emails that I send out every weekday to my list. And so I set up a launch sequence that was about five emails that were, so I kind of, again, I'm already emailing my list every weekday. And I think that's maybe important for people to realize. I'm not someone who's like, I email my list whenever I feel like it, or I email once a week. So people who are on my list are used to getting an email from me every day. So I just sort of shifted the conversation to talking about commoditization. So for about the first week before I did this launch, I started writing daily emails about commoditization. I would just find stuff in the news that, you know, was speaking about that, or kind of write my own little, you know, bit of content about it. And my emails, by the way, are short. They're 200 to 400 words usually. Sometimes they get longer than that, but rarely. So I built a launch sequence that was meant to kind of introduce the problem and sort of agitate the problem a little bit, and then introduce a solution, which was this boot camp. And so I did a week-long launch. Anyone who clicked a link in the email and went to look at the sales page for the boot camp, I tagged them with my email marketing software. I used Drip. Yep. There's other solutions that work great too, but I used Drip. And it let me do that. So if you click that link to the sales page, you got tagged. And that produced a internet marketers refer to it as a sublist, or in more modern terms, it's a segment. So I had a segment of, let's say, about 200 people who had expressed some level of interest in what this thing was. Somewhere between curiosity of like, what's this crazy guy doing who emails me every weekday, to you know, genuine interest. And then you could, of course, on the sales page, sign up to, you know, to do it. You could just, I think I had a buy button there, so you could buy right there. And then I did a sort of secondary launch to the people who expressed interest, and kind of had an urgency in there with a deadline, because this, I mean, that's legitimate, because this was a thing that was actually happening and starting at a certain date, so it's legitimate to say going gone, right?
Yeah.
And so I did that, but again, I stopped sending that to my entire list after about five emails, and then just sent another three or four emails just to the people who had expressed interest.
Okay.
And so that's how I marketed. I just sold it to my list. I think I did mention it. I am a panelist on the Freelancer Show podcast. I mentioned it there. But in general, I only try to sell these higher price things like courses and so forth to people who've bought my book, because they've kind of voted with their wallet that they're interested in the sort of conversation that I'm having, and I find that I think they're the best candidates to sell stuff to.
Yeah, definitely. So I heard email. Definitely, we always hear how effective email is. Podcasts, interviews, which I know you're a big proponent of getting interviewed on podcasts. Any other final tips for, you know, those of us who are introverts out there, how to sell without being too in your face about it?
I mean, the final tip I would say is that you are, I'm speaking to you introverts out there, you are likely to feel like you're interrupting people, or you're a little bit of a spammer, or feel like your perspective is not as valuable as it really is. That's just, I think the default settings that we get installed with as introverts kind of cause us to be very, very hesitant to market in a way that I think is assertive enough. And so just, I guess, kind of check yourself and see if that's going on. That may be holding you back a bit. And also know that your greatest strength is really talking to people and having a conversation, rather than kind of, you know, getting up on a stage and presenting yourself as some guru that you don't really feel like you are authentically. And just know that you can do it even if you're not kind of following that guru model. There's another way to do it, which is having conversations with people. And so that's just something to think about. In terms of, you know, specific tactics, there's tons of great ways to do it. I mean, yeah. I know some people have tons of success buying traffic through paid ads, and that's something I haven't even explored yet because for now, you know, the email marketing is working well enough for me.
Yeah. Most important thing, I think, is what you just said, like having that mindset shift of recognizing that you not only have value, but you're not interrupting or disturbing people. You're offering value. And I think when we start to shift and think in those terms, things get a little bit easier. I know they have for me. I'm an introvert as well. So
Yeah,
definitely. Okay. So we are down to the final three questions. First one, what's next for you, Philip? Anything exciting coming up?
So a couple things. Of course, a much better version of this Prison Break Bootcamp at a higher price point. In general, I'm really enjoying emphasizing this part of my business, the training and education part. In a way, it's the way I do it is almost like group consulting. So it's an interesting hybrid, I suppose, of consulting where, you know, in these office hours calls, I act like a consultant for people. But it's kind of taking advantage of the fact that I've got four or five people on the call and they're all paying me the same amount. And so it's got kind of some of the nice scalability aspects that a good online course would have. So I'm enjoying that. And I have toyed with the idea. I live in Sonoma County in California, a very beautiful place. And it's a bit of a destination for some people. So I've toyed with the idea of having an in-person workshop. Mm-hmm. I really think that's like 6 to 18 months out, but that could be very interesting where that would essentially be like an in-person version of this boot camp, obviously at a higher price point, but that's something I'm thinking about.
Okay.
And I just continue to look for better ways to, I really kind of see myself as a researcher and an experimenter trying to find things that work for my audience and then package them up either into free content or paid content. And I just look forward to more of the same. It's really been just, I can't believe I get to do this for a living.
Very nice. Okay, so where can people find out more about you?
Well, I always like to put it this way. If you go to google.com and put in a search for positioning, and the word Philip, I think I will probably own the first page of that search result. And that's an interesting example of the power of positioning. It's you don't even have to remember my last name. You just have to remember that I'm a guy named Philip who talked about positioning. And I think you will see that, you know, I focused on that. You can focus on some other subject and become very easily discoverable and kind of become the go-to person. So they can do that if they're interested in learning more about positioning itself. I have a free email course that's a good introduction to it, and that's at positioningcrashcourse.com. So that would be another way. And the second is really the one I would urge people to, because it just, I think, will show you more about what we're talking about here and help you start to apply it or think through it on your own.
And I can attest, I just Googled Positioning Philip, and you've got the first and second hits on that. So mm-hmm. definitely that is true. Okay, so last question, what's your why? Why do you get up and do this work every day?
It's the most enjoyable way I've found to make a living. Still working on the trust fund thing, so to be honest, if that was in place, I can't say what my life would be like, but I get a thrill from helping people improve their business. It would start as a little bit of a scratch your own itch thing. Like it was so frustrating to me to feel like a sort of a failure as a freelancer. And so as soon as I started finding some things that seemed like reliable fixes for that, I just wanted to teach other people because I enjoy doing that and I enjoy seeing other people benefit from it. So I think that's the why. It gets me up in the morning. It's just a great way to make a living and help other people at the same time.
Beautiful. Well, Philip, thank you so much for being here. This has been really great. I think people are going to get a ton of value.
Oh, good, good, good. Glad to hear that.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Philip Morgan. Philip is really one of the most genuine, knowledgeable people I have met online. And I just think he has tons to offer as far as positioning and how to position not only services, but digital products like courses as well. So definitely check him out at philipmorganconsulting.com. And if you're looking for the show notes, you can find them at zencourses.co/033. Once again, that's zencourses.co/033 for episode 33. All right, so I promised to share some exciting things that Philip and I are putting together for you. So first up, we're hosting a free workshop on positioning. So if you enjoyed this episode and you want to learn more about positioning, if you're a little curious, today is June 15th, 2016, which also happens to be the day of the workshop. So if you're listening today, there's still time. You can join us by going to zencourses.co/free workshop and clicking on the register link. Even if you miss the workshop, you'll be able to get the replay. Now, you're probably thinking, Janelle, that is so last minute. And okay, that's fair. That's totally fair. We are also hosting a follow-up workshop next Wednesday, June 22nd, on marketing strategies for introverts. So that's something that Philip and I kind of got into in this episode. And I know that's a big deal for a lot of you. I personally have struggled with marketing in the past because I didn't want to come across as too salesy. And, you know, I just didn't know how to market without being too in your face about it. So if that's something that you've struggled with too, this workshop is perfect for you. You'll learn some key marketing strategies that work, that get results, and won't make you feel like a sleazy used car salesman. So you can register by heading to that same link, zencourses.co/free workshop. And that will give you information on the workshop, and there's a link where you can register. Okay? Oh, before I forget, these workshops are completely free. Philip and I have also put together some nice bonuses for you if you attend. And again, if you can't make it, just go ahead and register and you will get the replay. Okay? One more time. Head over to zencourses.co/free workshop to see the full schedule and register for the workshops. There's a couple other ones that I'm hosting this month. So you can see the ones with Philip and I and then register for the other ones too if you like those. If you forget that URL, there is a shiny yellow button on the Zen Courses homepage that'll take you right to that page. So never fear, I've got you. Cool? All right. It is that time. As always, thank you for hanging out with me. I'm Janelle Allen, and this has been the Zen Courses Show. Have an amazing day.